From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth. It's the weekly talk show about environmental issues and sustainability. I'm Lynn Ware-Peak, sitting in for Nell Larson today.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Well, the holiday season gets kicked off this week, beginning with Fat Thursday, followed by Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, Cyber Monday, and finally, everybody is just getting a gift card this year Wednesday.
Did you make that up, Chris?
No.
No, you didn't. It's a real thing.
I did.
Okay, but we have an online shopping alternative, and it's an extremely environmentally friendly one, too. It's the Spotted Door. It's an online store that sells goods and products that are manufactured from at least 50% recycled content. Now, everything from furniture to clothing to jewelry and kitchenware.
Jason Utgard is the owner of the Spotted Door, and he joins us in the first half hour of the show to talk about his story, his inspiration, and some of the other environmental causes he is involved in.
All that, and then some news about Duke Energy getting fined for bird kills at its wind farms, mercury levels in pregnant moms dropping by 34%, the Earth experiencing its seventh warmest October on record, and a correction from last week's story on the fuel rod removal going on at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant.
Yes. Well read, Lynn.
I wasn't here for last week's story, so you'll have to update me on
that. That's why I'm going to talk about it and give you the right information. Of course, you can join in on today's discussion by posting your questions or comments to our Facebook page, KPCW, This Green Earth.
It's the environment and our connections to it. That's This Green Earth, and it all gets started right after these words from our underwriters. Stay with us.
Hi, this is Reese DeMille with Republic Services, your local source for recycling and garbage services, and a proud sponsor of KPCW's This Green Earth. Recycling in Summit County is improving. The trick to remember? Recyclable materials go in your larger blue or brown bin, and gray is for garbage. Recycling helps keep Summit County clean. SummitCountyRecycles.org.
This is Tom Roney with Prudential Utah Real Estate, and we're happy to support KPCW. Prudential Utah has been helping locals and visitors with their real estate needs since 1976. Our agents know the community and the local market. More information can be found online at prud-utah.com or at one of our 14 offices throughout Park City.
Welcome to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak. Joining me today as guest co-host is Lynn Ware-Peak.
Good morning, Chris.
Nell is on assignment.
On assignment somewhere where there's a Thanksgiving dinner, no doubt.
Exactly. Well, that's not a bad assignment to have. But thanks for joining me to talk about today's topics, including the Spotted Door. It's an online store, as we might want to call it, that sells products, among other things, that are at least 50%, or the material that goes into making the products is at least 50% recyclable. And the owner of that online store is here with us. His name is Jason Utgard, and he joins us here in the studio, and he's here to correct me if I'm wrong with that. But thanks for joining us on
This
Green Earth, Jason. So let's start here. Give us a little background on what inspired you to set up this operation.
Yeah, definitely. So I've been in retail and product sourcing and product design for a very long time. And I first moved out to Utah about 7 years ago from Minnesota, and I was working in my family's chain of sporting goods stores. And right there in the distribution center, if you ever had kind of the pinnacle or focus point of a retail operation, you realize there's a lot of stuff in the pipeline. There's a lot of products, a lot of what's referred to as dunnage, which is the cardboard and packaging and what have you. And after a while, you kind of wonder where it's coming from and where it's going, and you never ever see it again. And you know, after I started researching a little bit more, and I decided, you know, we can make functional, fashionable, you know, nice quality products from recycled material and stop using virgin resources and a number of other resources that were just depleting way too quickly.
So, Jason, I want to just get this established first of all. Is your online store sort of a clearinghouse for a bunch of different companies who are selling recycled products, or is it all your products?
It's a mix of both. We do some of our own products. We also carry other folks' products. The main focus is that we didn't want to be just an everyday green store. We wanted to focus only on products made from recycled materials. I think a lot of times in a green store, you get a lot of nice, solar-powered backpacks, or you might get soy-based health and beauty products. You might get bamboo wood cutting boards, but then you kind of lose the focus, and you lose the recycled products in there. So I wanted to start an online, accessible to everyone store that only focused on recycled products.
Okay, so was I correct that all of your products are contain at least 50% recyclable materials?
Yeah, and we set the bar that way so that we avoid greenwashing. There's a lot of companies out there that say they have recycled content, and you'll get we'll look into it, and they'll say, well, it's 6% recycled content. Well, that's not enough. That's not good enough for us. It has to be at least 50% or more, which a lot of the items on the site are.
Okay, well, let's talk about some of the items. Let's run through them.
Yeah.
Everything from clothing to housewares to jewelry, et cetera. Give us some examples.
Yeah, so we have a number of different items on the site, like Chris said, across a number of different categories. Some of them are probably a little bit more well-known. The materials that are used, such as glass. We have recycled glass jewelry, rubber. We have recycled rubber bags, DOP kits, belts. We have some reclaimed wood furniture. And then we kind of trickle into, some other items that maybe you're not as familiar with. For example, we have a line of bags that are made from automotive upholstery. We have some new jewelry on the site that's made from circuit boards from old computers that were discarded, and they were then turned back into jewelry. And so we're trying to capture all of those items that maybe you place curbside, but then also those items that you don't think about. For example, highway billboards. A lot of people don't realize that billboard material, once it's done, it's done, and a lot of it ends up being landfill bound. Mm-hmm. And so we started making some cosmetics bags out of that, and tote bags, and some other items that we're coming out with.
And now, Jason, you've brought a couple of those bags from billboard signs. It's phenomenal. And I saw these first last summer at the Park Silly Sunday Market. You make some great stuff. Who would have ever known that a billboard is made of this fabric right here, which I'm sure you know all about it, but it's very, very thick. It must never disappear in a landfill.
Yeah, and that's kind of both the problem and the opportunity in a nutshell, is that once you get people to start thinking about, hey, before you put this in the bin or you look to discard this, once you see something that's made out of it, you say, wait a minute, I know somebody who makes something out of this material. I gotta get it to them and get it back into the loop. I know that those folks in the Spotted Door or wherever it might be, they make stuff out of, for example, billboards.
Okay, right. So this, sorry, Chris, is called a
Rilon?
RilonBag.com. That's where you can find these. And is Rilon this material?
That's actually that company, we design these cosmetics bags kind of in partnership with those guys, because what their main business is they work with the Sports Alliance, which is partnering with the MLB, NFL, NBA, basically the major league teams, to take back their billboards at the end of the season. Rilon will turn them into some tote bags or other items for their fans, and then they send them back to them. So they might send them back to the Chicago Bulls or whoever it might be, and then they give them out to their fans. So we said, let's try some other items, with the leftover scraps that you have, for the Spotted Door, and try to come up with some new ideas of what we can make, make from this material.
Okay, so going back to this bar that you said of 50%, I'm just curious, of the materials that are out there, are the goods and products that are out there that, again, tout themselves as being using recycled materials, what percentage would you say don't meet your standards?
That's a really good question. When I came from a huge retail background, and when I started this company, I basically had to take my whole Rolodex and essentially recycle it, because I had to basically disregard the bulk of products out there. And then when I did find folks that were using recycled materials, it is difficult for them to get up to that standard, either because they've never
had any standards in place to get up to that point. They just wanted to include a small smidgen to at least be considered green. And so, you know, once I get down to it, it's probably less than 5% of the companies that I talk to that actually meet that standard.
Really?
Yeah, it's
wow.
Okay. I mean, and it doesn't take you long to figure that out. I mean, a lot of times you just have to go to the mall, walk down the mall and go store to store to store and look at all the different brands, all the different retailers that carry products and ask them where the items that are at least made from over 50% recycled content, and they might be at a loss or they're going to have trouble finding it. And so that's kind of the same thing that I've experienced talking to different companies.
And not to say that those products that are less than 50% are not quality products. It's just you have a standard, you said, and so you're only 5% of the time you're finding something that meets that.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
I have a question, Jason, about packaging. I mean, you might have a product itself that, you know, meets the requirement, but we know that sometimes the packaging that the products come in is so offensive, and you must know this from your previous family-based business in Minnesota, that packaging is a huge part of it. So even though you might have a recycled product, it doesn't really matter because the packaging is such waste.
Exactly. And we try to work with all of our the different brands that end up putting their products on the site, or that we accept a list on the site and have that discussion beforehand to see what they're using for their packaging. Is it big and bulky? Is it too big for the item itself? You know, can it be made smaller? Are you using recycled material? A lot of the folks that actually have their products on the site reuse their packaging material. But it is definitely a concern. It's nice to see, though, that a lot of big online retailers are starting to use technologies that will actually send an item down a conveyor belt, and that'll take basically a laser measurement of the item and determine what type of package it should go in once that order is all together. And that's when you're starting to see, you know, Amazon and some of the big boys out there starting to send packages that include less packaging. So there's some interesting technologies out there for that now.
If you just join us, we're speaking with Jason Utgard. He's the owner or proprietor of the online store, The Spotted Door, and I assume that's the website, thespotteddoor.com?
Yep.
Okay. And it's an online store that sells products that are ostensibly at least 50% recycled in their materials. And like the example of the cosmetic bag you brought in made from recycled billboard material, I would assume that's something way more than 50%.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's at that point, it's kind of tough to calculate. It's 95 or 98.
Okay.
I mean,
right. I mean, on this,
it's the entire thing. It's
the zipper has got to be new. You don't want a really recycled zipper, do you? And,
I don't know.
And this little strap.
Yeah.
Okay, what else? Do you have anything else? Bag?
We have the recycled rubber bags, and these have been really popular because, you know, they're water resistant and they're, you know, made from a tractor tire inner tube, which a lot of folks, again, aren't really familiar with what that might look like and feel like. But it's, you know, very durable. What a lot of folks like about it is you can drag it on the ground, you can drive your car over it. We say it has a second lifetime warranty because it survived its first lifetime as a tire,
tractor,
or whatever,
tire inner tube. And now it's a book bag slash courier bag type of thing.
Yep.
That's great. That's nice looking.
And I have a question about that, Jason. I mean, in recent years, we've seen more and more products made out of bicycle inner tubes. Mm-hmm. And I think recycling programs are very active in promoting that they recycle bike inner tubes and bike tires even. And then, you know, the cycling community might have more of a tendency to want to recycle. But these are, you know, bike tubes, you can only make them. They're only so wide when you cut them open. That's what's cool about these tractor tire inner tubes.
Yeah.
And how big is the program for recycling those, and how, you know?
Yeah, and so you kind of have to go a different route with all of these materials. It's kind of, you know, you have to, you know, at first we have to go where the material is being collected the best, and then try to replicate that type of collection elsewhere. So the bike shops are a great example because, you know, started off as the recycling community probably saying, hey, you know, we can make a lot of cool stuff out of this. We'd like to collect that from your fans of your bike shop and all the people all your patrons there. And then the bike shops go, yeah, that's cool. And we could sell some of that in our store, and then we should start collecting these. And so it kind of creates that loop. So the bike community has actually been really on the forefront of using recycled rubber. But it's also because it's the main component of what they're using, and probably the most prominent so in their mind.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the business aspects of of your business, let's say.
Yeah.
Is this your first
online
business? Okay.
Yep.
For those of people out there who are interested in starting their own, what were some of the challenges you face in running an online business?
Yeah, you know, if anything, it's about being discovered. I think a lot of people will tell you that when you first launch your website. I remember this old commercial. I think it was like a UPS commercial from the Super Bowl, and these guys had done all their marketing, and they had really done a really great job beforehand, and they turned the website on, and they had like a little bleep, 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 and then all the orders started coming in, and it was going crazy. Well, we, of course, didn't experience that that type of fortune. But the other thing, too, is especially with a unique item, you know, if people don't even know that, for example, that you can make a cosmetics bag out of a highway billboard, they're not going to go online and search for a cosmetics bag made from a highway billboard. You just don't naturally do that. And so you got to, you know, we've found the most helpful thing is doing online marketing through social media outlets that are most more visual in nature. So Instagram has been really popular. Facebook has, of course, been really popular. And Pinterest as well. So we like to share a lot of the items on there, and then people see, oh, whoa. And then they kind of get that realization. And then that makes them, you know, see the spotted door. But that's kind of been the difficult part, is just with the nature of the materials, getting people to see the storefront and come and peruse a little bit.
But obviously, if somebody was searching on, I need gifts for this holiday season, and I want them to have be recycled or repurposed or reused, those would be tag words that would send them to your
site.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's what what you're figuring out.
Yep.
Those be, or sustainable or whatever other tag words like that might send them to your site.
Exactly.
Yep. Okay. So what's your competition like? Are there others out there?
Yeah, there is. And there are some really great stores out there, really, that do recycled products. They might cover all green products. But I think with our niche, that's kind of the reason why I started the store, is because nobody was really focusing just on recycled products, but also holding everything to one standard. And so, the competition out there, they capture a lot of other things like solar powered accessories and that sort of thing that we don't carry.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, just wondering then, does it have to do with the price point of things that you offer? Do you try to keep it within a certain range?
You know, we try to. We have items on the site that are as low as maybe $10 to $40. But we also have some furniture that's upwards of, you know, $1,500. It just depends really on, because just the nature of the material. Because when you're working with recycled products, about 30% of the initial process is cleaning it, you know, trimming it, restoring it back to what you would have probably bought it as new, as a manufacturer, and then turning it into the next product.
Now, that brings up another question about about being up to a standard that you're trying to achieve, even in terms of how things are processed. Do you get into that? Are you able to go that far into a certain company? And
Yeah. We actually had a reclaimed a company out of, I believe it's in Georgia, they were making accessories and furniture from reclaimed wood, and they were putting some type of sealant on there. And they didn't specify what it was. And so we actually went back and forth for about a week and a half, and they, you know, showed receipts of, you know, the type of product that they were putting on there, because, you know, they were just as passionate and got almost just as offended that we were asking, because they had spent so much time researching that. But that's where the passion comes out. And we say, hey, you know what, we're both on the same page and this is great. But we do actually go through and say and definitely sanitize everything.
That is very interesting. You know, this term greenwashing, we've heard it a lot. And I suppose that you've learned some pretty flagrant violations of, you know, a green standard you've seen. What's the, you know, do you have any stories about that?
Yeah. I actually just saw a product the other day, and I can't remember the name. It was called something like Eco Tote, or it was meant to be a ladies-oriented line of tote bags. And it's this is an eco tote, and I go, okay, cool. I wonder what this is made out of. Maybe it's, you know, hemp or, you know, bamboo threading, or maybe it's recycled plastic. No, there is nothing. It was 100% cotton, just like a T-shirt or anything that you might buy. And it was just meant to be eco in the sense that you would stop using plastic bags.
Oh, right.
So it was just really just a another bag that you would buy.
It
was just branded as eco tote or eco bag, whatever it was.
Eco pesticide. Exactly. So, you know, you can attach eco to anything.
Eco, groovy.
That way. And so yeah. It's up to you to determine whether it's greenwashing or not, or how credible it is. That's the challenge out there.
Yeah.
Loose definitions like that. Any providers that are local?
Yeah. We had a company called 40 North Glassworks. They make glassware out of the High West whiskey bottles. And so those were pretty popular.
Those.
We actually I don't even know why I'm bringing them up, because we don't have any on the site at the moment, because they've
sold out. Yeah. They're so popular.
Yeah, exactly. But and we're also looking at some. But you know, we've only been operating since April. So
okay.
If there's anybody out there listening, of course, too. I mean, we're happy to hear from you.
Well, we were talking before the show about all these different days. You know, I was making fun of Thanksgiving. But, I mean, all these other – there's these other days out there that are coming up. There's, of course, Black Friday, Small Business Saturday you were talking about, Cyber Monday.
Yep.
Right? And then I have an idea. We need to have a sustainable a day.
Yeah.
You know, where if you were going to shopping, you would try to be – that it would involve, like, going to your website and buying recycled or repurposed or reused products or sustainable goods or local business,
sustainable
or farmers
Sunday?
Market. A sustainable Sunday,
exactly.
Yeah.
So there's an idea to put out there.
And it's
think in those terms.
Yeah, and you have plenty of time to recoup from Thanksgiving, you know, so you'll have 2 days to lay around on the couch and then
the final one, of course, is a China-free. I want people to have a China-free Christmas.
Mm.
Okay? See if you can't buy a gift. See if you can't buy your gifts this year and not one of them being made in China.
Ooh.
See if that's possible.
Well, probably if you just go to Jason's online store.
He doesn't have anything.
then that would be an easy one-stop shopping.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, it's kind of funny. I mean, we get a lot of people that say, well, I bet all this stuff is made in China. We actually, I mean, Chris and I were talking before the show. I don't, there's nothing on the site right now that's made from China. And just coincidentally, about 95% or more happens to be made in the U.S. And that wasn't by intention. It was just by finding creative folks who happen to also be in the U.S.
Right.
So.
Right. Now, some of the contents of the items that are recycled would have been made in China, for example, an inner tube.
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny. We sold a bicycle inner tube, a little pouch for your bike the other day, and the lady came back and she goes, "This was made in China?" And I go, no, it's the bicycle inner tube, because it says made in China on the bicycle inner tube. I'm like, no, it was actually made in Colorado. Don't worry, but the original tube
Material, right.
That would be a good argument for not using that portion of the inner tube that says made in China on it.
Anyway,
that's my
usual.
Does
that qualify for the China-free Christmas?
Yes. Or China, you know what? China light. How about that?
Okay.
China light.
Start with China light and work your way to China free.
Hey, do you have a warehouse here, or how is it completely online and everything? I don't even know what that word is in terms of distribution when you order it from someone else's warehouse and send it out.
It's called drop shipping.
There we go.
And we have some inventory here. We don't have enough to have a warehouse, but we do have just really, really small amount of inventory here. It does actually reduce your carbon footprint by not shipping it, you know, from California to New York to then ship it back to a customer in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you just don't touch it, then only touch it when you need to get it to the final customer, you're actually, you know, helping with that. So,
mm-hmm. And speaking of shipping, am I correct that the Spotted Door offers free shipping?
Yes, we do on a lot of our items. Many of the only items that we don't offer free shipping on are the furniture.
Mm-hmm.
But even some of the furniture is free shipping, but most of the items are.
All right. Jason Utgard, he's the owner and proprietor of the online store, the Spotted Door.
Or SpotteddOor.com.
Or SpotteddOor,
but
both.
We go by the Spotted Door.
Hey, way to go buying both of those domains.
Exactly. That's now thinking. Yeah, check out the website. It's got a lot of great information, great products.
Facebook and Twitter and Instagram.
Okay, the usual.
Yep.
The usual suspects to get there. Jason, well, thank you again for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
On this green earth, and have a China-free Christmas.
Will do.
Thanks,
and holidays.
Jason.
All right.
Great bags.
Thanks.
Thank you. Let's take a break for some underwriters. And we come back. We got a bunch of news items we want to get to. It's This Green Earth. Stay tuned.
Yahoo! Powder days are on the way. Another holiday is fast approaching at Park City Nursery. We're happy to celebrate the season with KPCW, offering a selection of fresh, field-grown Christmas trees, handmade wreaths and garlands, decorations, candles, and gardening gifts. A continued family tradition since 1983. We know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com.
Donations to Park City's ReStore reduce landfill costs for residents and builders and prevents tons of material from entering the waste stream each year. And proceeds from resale of your donated items help fund Habitat for Humanity affordable housing programs in Summit and Wasatch counties. ReStore is open Wednesday through Saturday, 10 to 6, and is located in Silver Summit at 6280 Silver Creek Drive. Habitat for Humanity of Summit and Wasatch counties is a nonprofit organization.
Join us for The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch, Wednesdays at 9 a.m.
From going gluten-free to finding your balance.
From bike position to relationship alignment.
From the educational journey to navigating wellness.
That's Wednesdays at 9 a.m. on The Mountain Life, only in Park City, only on KPCW.
Brought to you by Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Stein Erickson Lodge and Spa, Park City Clinic, and Grand Valley Bank.
And welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Lynn Ware-Peak, sitting in for Nell Larson, who's on assignment somewhere out there in the world today.
Yes.
I'm here with my co-host, Chris Cherniak. And we just spoke with Jason Utgard. He's the owner of the Spotted Door. Very interesting.
Right.
And I have to say, they were beautiful bags when I saw them.
Yeah, those are
the recycled inner tubes.
Yeah.
Tractor inner tubes.
Check that out on his website. And actually, he's going to sit in with us on these news items. We'll have a little roundtable discussion. And at some point, we're going to talk to Jason again about his work with the Climate Reality Project. But want to do run through a few news items. All right. And we're going to start with...
Well, how about this? What? The seventh warmest October on record. This doesn't sound as dire as maybe... I heard last year. Could I be wrong? Did I hear a different statistic last year?
No, this is the seventh warmest October according to NOAA's National Climatic Data Center. Okay, mm-hmm. They track the globe's temperature. You know, there's thermometers all around the world, all around the planet, and they collect all this data and they process it and they determine that. The month of October was the seventh warmest that it's ever been recorded since data was had begun to be collected back in 1880. Okay, so that's about 133 years. So of 133 Octobers, this is the seventh warmest October ever recorded. Now the other six warmer ones were
the last 6 years.
Well, close to it since the year. Probably since the year 2000 or since the year 1998. 1998 was an unusually warm year too. But I feel comfortable saying that since the year 2000, the top warmest Octobers occurred before this one. So this was the seventh warmest one. So it's in the top 5% of the warmest Octobers ever recorded.
Right. And how is this data mined specifically? I mean, how can you look at the statistics in different ways to show different things? Or is it only pointing to one thing?
No, well, the data is collected by, again, just like you have weather stations all around the planet, northern hemisphere, southern hemisphere. Now, obviously, back in the 1880s, 90s, 19, you didn't have as many thermometers, let's put it that way. So the data was a little more, wasn't as quantified, or what's called the granularity of it was less. But now you have hundreds of thousands of weather station of data or mm-hmm. potential to collect data around the planet. And NOAA's National Climatic Data Center collects this data, and then they collect air temperatures. They look at sea surface temperatures, and they put it all together, and they come up with the planet's average temperature. And that's how they came to this October, on just for the month of October, the seventh warmest. Now, the other interesting thing is that for the period year to date of January through October, so for the 9 months of 2013, this has been the seventh warmest 9 month period also. So it's a very warm year again. And that's the point. Again, the trends continue that these that year in, year out, we're seeing warmer and warmer, or at least consistently warm years since the year 2000 compared to, you know, other decades. Mm-hmm. All right. So that's what's going on with the weather. All right. So and that's what Jason's learned at the Climate Reality Project that he attended in Chicago, right? Back in Al Gore's Climate Reality Project. You learned that among other things.
Yep, exactly. And one the main point too is that, you know, as we keep breaking these records, the weather that we know, for example, today is going to be kind of the, you know, we're going to look back, you know, 50 years from now and say that was kind of the weird or the kind of unnaturally calm weather compared to what we might be experiencing 40 to 50 years from now even.
Right. There's suggestions that these warm periods will be considered normal.
Yeah.
Or even below normal.
Exactly.
You know, as things get even warmer then. Okay, so that's the challenge with weather. Now let's hear some potentially good news with respect to this, because what's driving the warming conditions, greenhouse gases, and the biggest greenhouse gas is carbon dioxide, and whereas the biggest contributor carbon dioxide to the atmosphere is coal-fired power plants. But here in the U.S., we're starting to see a decrease in the number of coal-fired power plants being operated. A lot of them are being retired. A lot of plans for coal-fired power plants have been shelved. And coal is being swapped out for natural gas-fired power plants. Now, granted, natural gas-fired power plants produce carbon dioxide too, but roughly about 40% less on a per-unit energy basis. So here's a little story I got this morning. This is from the U.S. Energy Information Administration. It says the Southeast U.S. leads in the transition of coal to gas-fired power plants. And quickly, coal... In the Southeast, roughly 55% of the Southeast electricity used to be provided by coal-fired power plants, and that was as late as 2009, 2010. This year, it's down to 39%. So we've seen a 16 percentage point drop in electricity being produced using coal, most of that being swapped again, transitioning to gas-fired.
So what's the real story behind that, Chris?
Well, the story there, the reason is economics. Some of it has to do with regulations. There's regulations, EPA has regulations that are coming out that will put more restrictions on coal-fired power plants, requiring them to basically clean up the emissions coming out of their stacks, mercury and other particulate matter. And so it's going to be more expensive to run a coal-fired power plant. So that's one reason why some of these utilities are shutting down or transitioning over to natural gas, because natural gas burns cleaner. Remember, coal doesn't produce carbon dioxide. It produces nitrogen oxide, sulfur dioxide. It produces mercury. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget about it. And that's I got another story about that. And it produces ash, whether it's flue ash out of the stack or bottom ash. So there's a number of pollutants that come from a coal-fired power plant. Natural gas is cheaper, but it has come down in price as more and more natural gas is being drilled for and extracted. So it's economics and regulations that go into it.
Yep.
So
and can I add one thing here, Chris? You know, the main component of natural gas is methane. And, you know, that's still considered a greenhouse gas. And one thing I actually read the other day is, you know, one of the leading states for wind power is Iowa. And when I was looking at that article and doing some research, I read that we now have more jobs in this country
in the wind power industry than we do in the coal industry, which I think a lot of people aren't aware of that.
No.
But you can see the transition that we've already made so quickly away from coal.
Yeah.
In general.
Yes, exactly. And it's going to continue unless the interesting thing is what happens when the price of natural gas goes back up, because it's kind of volatile.
Yeah.
What happens when natural gas goes back up? Will these utilities go back to coal? That's kind of a
to coal, but more towards sustainable energy production.
Well, if wind and solar are cost competitive, they will. So those are the challenges. But the most encouraging thing is we're using less and less coal in this country, and utilities are recognizing that value for a number of reasons. And that's what's really encouraging.
And call me crazy, but I think some utility companies are listening to their customers more and more. I think people have looked at their utility as like, oh, no, I can't believe these guys. But they actually are starting to listen a little, you know, listen more. And that's, I think, appreciated by their customers.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. So we got a call. And before I forget to mention this, we want to thank Steve for calling in. He called in about a No China movement back to the, you know, all your different days of shopping. It's called No Cargo. The website is www.shopnocargo.com. He says there are all kinds of products, none of which come from China. Jewelry, toys, games, arts and crafts, and leather goods. So I want to thank Steve for calling in and letting our listeners know about that.
Wait a minute.
How about
You mean somebody had this idea before me? NoCargo.com.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's a day related Black Friday.
But the point is that there's a place you can go if you want to avoid purchasing products from China.
I wonder if that's just all USA made, if it's no cargo from anywhere, or if it's – but it'd be something to check out.
Yeah.
Yeah, the name would suggest it's just domestic, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Our listeners will have to log on there, shopnocargo.com.
Okay. That's great.
All made in America.
Okay,
Ethel's chiming in
all
from the back.
Let's take another quick break for some underwriters. We'll continue. We got a couple additional news items about mercury and wind and golden eagles and – other stuff. It's This Green Earth. Stay tuned.
I'm John Wells.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Join us for Cool Science Radio Thursdays at 9 a.m.
From the discovery of new dinosaurs to the science of an avalanche.
From the secret technology behind Facebook to nanotechnology.
Deciphering science and tech in an entertaining, amusing, and accessible way.
It's Cool Science Radio. If we understand it, so can you.
Thursdays at 9 a.m. only in Park City, only on KPCW.
Brought to you by Peak Art and Frame.
Support for KPCW comes from the Utah Olympic Park. Join the Utah Olympic Park in supporting our world-class athletes and their Olympic journey. Don't miss Utah's Road to Sochi featured event. The Bobsled and Skeleton World Cup, December 6th and 7th, free admission. Event details and VIP tickets are available online at UtahOlympicLegacy.com. Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing sport and recreation opportunities.
Should we go to mercury levels?
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Chris Cherniak. She's Lynn Ware Peak, who's talking.
Didn't see my microphone was on.
No professional.
I'm glad I wasn't slandering you.
We're also joined with Jason Utgard, owner and proprietor of The Spotted Door, who's kind of sitting in on a little roundtable discussion on some news items. Let's continue the thread here with respect to coal. Like I said, among other things, burning coal produces mercury, and the fact that here, at least here in this country, we're burning less coal to produce electricity. That's all we really do with coal in this country for the most part. And so one of the results is that the EPA study came out last week that strongly suggests that mercury levels in women of childbearing ages has dropped 34%. So how mercury gets into our system by the food we consume. And the biggest sources of mercury is – and one particular form of mercury, methylmercury, is from fish.
Yep.
Now, fish are healthy and they're an important part of our diet. But if you eat the wrong fish, you know, certain types of fish have more mercury than others. And these are fish at the top end of the food chain because mercury bioaccumulates its way up the food chain. So mm-hmm. once you get to the tuna, certain types of tuna and swordfish, et cetera, that's where you're at most risk to consuming mercury, introducing mercury into your system.
So this brings up a question for me, Chris. Are we becoming a more educated citizenry in that we are truly avoiding the wrong types of fish, or are we just altogether saying, I'm just not going to eat fish anymore because I don't know. The truth is, I don't know if I should buy farm fish, if right. I should buy organic fish or wild-caught fish. I'm just going to avoid it altogether.
I think you struck on a really important point, and I think we are becoming more educated, better educated, greater awareness about what is good and what is potentially harmful for us, in this case, different types of fish. And as a result, we're changing behaviors, because it's one thing for me to educate you about not, you know, avoiding swordfish, but it's another thing for you to go out and avoid, you know, if you love swordfish and you and your local restaurant is having a, you know, it's all you can eat swordfish, you know, yeah. for $137 a plate, you can have all the swordfish you want. That's the real challenge. Are you going to change your behavior? And in this case, this study is suggesting that women, A, are better educated about the issue and changing their behavior. And here's the fish they're avoiding, among other things. Swordfish, shark, king mackerel. That's kind of interesting. Tilefish. There's other different types of tuna. You can go to Monterey Bay Aquarium's website, and they have a great listing of all the fish to avoid and all the fish that are good for you that with respect to mercury levels.
I have a question for you, and this perhaps comes out of my lack of education, but I have found the best salmon in town.
Okay.
And it's Scottish salmon. It doesn't say it's wild caught. It doesn't say it's organic.
Right.
Do they do something in Scotland that's better about how they farm raise?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. Sometimes they're given names like Scottish salmon or Norwegian salmon, and they're not necessarily from either Scotland or Norway.
Ah. Mm.
Yeah, they could be eco salmon for all we know, right?
Exactly.
But we were talking, so I think you'd have to be careful about that.
I would like one of our listeners to do a little investigative research into that, because it is the tastiest salmon.
Really?
I can make it at home, and it tastes better than, you know, or as good as you'd find it anywhere in any restaurant. And I am no gourmand. I'm not a culinary genius by any stretch.
Exactly.
So, okay.
All right. Well, that's a good point, though. But that's another source of educating ourselves now. What is Scottish salmon? What is Norwegian salmon? Are they wild? Are they farmed? What's the difference? There's still a lot of education out there.
But overall, salmon is one of the fish that is actually considered to be low in mercury. At least this is what the EPA is saying, along with shrimp, canned light tuna.
Mm-hmm.
Pollock. There we go. And catfish.
Yeah.
I haven't had any pollock ever.
No, you may have.
I have.
Because pollock goes by a number of other names. Yes.
Oh.
General.
Yeah. fish sticks.
Yeah. It's pollock. It's fine. It's a good fish. It's a good fish. But you may have had
a light white fish.
Crab.
Oh, okay. Crab
with a K. Sometimes it's pollock.
Gotcha.
So, okay. Next story. This one's really interesting. Regards wind farms, we're talking about.
Yep.
And some of the issues associated with wind farms, among other things, they have a tendency to kill birds, or birds fly into them, fly into the vanes of the wind
propellers.
The turbine.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Thank you very much. So here it is. Duke Energy agrees to pay fine for eagle deaths at one of their wind farms. In a settlement reached with the Department of Justice, Duke Energy Renewables pleaded guilty in the deaths of 14 golden eagles and 149 other migratory birds at two of its wind energy facilities in Wyoming. These deaths occurred over roughly a two-year period. Again, most of them are raptors, you know, the golden eagles and other raptors, because, you know, where you find wind farms, you're going to find raptors, because they're after the same thing, wind on high ridges, and that's where they do their hunting. So they're most at risk.
Well, and now to its credit, Duke Energy Renewables, after paying a fine, they constructed some safeguards, shall we say,
sure.
to minimize the hazard. And I'm wondering exactly how that's done. I don't know what the compliance plan is to minimize the hazards.
Yeah.
Build a high fence.
Well, yeah. They say they're trying to develop a radar system that might detect when a bird is in the area, then that turbine would either slow or shut down. Good luck with that.
Yeah. Back in Wisconsin, we used to put out an owl to scare the other birds off from like our boat cover or something. You kind of wonder if they can put something like that on top of the windmill. It's also, you look at all the other energy that we extract using other resources and what animals are effective at that process. Is this just part of?
Yeah, that's a good point, Jason. I did a little research.
Okay.
Okay. I did a little research on how birds meet their demise in other ways.
Okay.
Okay. And now I went to a site called songbirdgarden.com. All right. So this is a Audubon avian based site.
Okay.
And they had a listing of the different types of bird kills in different ways. And their information comes from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Studies, National Audubon Society studies. So this is okay. This isn't IHateBirds.com or ILoveWindFarms.com. Okay,
yeah.
So this is. Let me just run by you some of the ways birds find their demise. Hunting, of course, mm-hmm. roughly 100 million birds a year. But okay, that's hunting. Electrocution on transmission lines, whether they're from wind farms or coal-fired power.
That's the second one.
No, I'm just saying roughly 1,000 birds a year are killed on electrocution. Communication towers in general, 4 million birds are estimated. And these are low ends of ranges. They gave ranges. I'm just doing the low end.
Wow.
Pesticides, 60 million birds a year are killed from pesticides. Okay? So perspective. Cars and trucks, you want to take a guess at how many birds are killed by cars and trucks a year?
Over 100
Perhaps
million?
More than 60 million.
50 million.
50 million?
50 million. 50 million. And finally, house cats. Don't get me started on house cats. 100 million a year. Now, these are little, they're not golden eagles or any other raptors. House cats are smart enough. They're these are more little upland species. But my neighbor's cats have pretty much wiped out my house finch population or scared them off otherwise. So perspective here.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, turbines, wind turbines.
Kill birds,
but there's some perspective here.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you want? You want clean energy or do you want coal-fired power plants or natural gas-fired power plants, which birds may also run into?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Let's take one more break. And when we come back, we'll start to wrap up. It's This Green Earth. Stay tuned.
Contrary to popular belief, getting pregnant can be difficult. For some couples, it can be quite a challenge. The OBGYNs at Park City Specialty Clinic are there to help you find solutions for pregnancy on your terms. The appointment number is 435-658-7400. Intermountain Healthcare is a nonprofit organization.
This is Chris Robinson with Prudential Utah Real Estate, and we've been supporting KPCW since day one. Prudential Utah helps buyers and sellers with their home needs, whether it's a condo, single-family house, or undeveloped land. Our agents know our community and our local market. More information can be found at pru-utah.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. Weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak. She's Lynn Ware Peak. Jason Utgard joins us from the Spotted Door. Got a couple more minutes. I wanted to real quick run through. Last week I gave a little news item about this fuel rod removal starting at the Fukushima Daiichi plant. I gave the wrong number. There's probably estimated 20,000 fuel rods that have to be removed from the four units that got impacted by the earthquake and the tsunami. And I said it was 20,000 fuel rods in each unit. It's 20,000 fuel rods in total.
Total. Okay.
Okay. So I just want to make sure I got the correction. From these four units, it's not a difficult process, but it's labor intensive. It's going to take years to do. Two of the units suffered actual meltdown conditions. I have no idea how they're going to get fuel rods out of there, but they're starting with the easy one in unit mm-hmm. four, and they're pulling the fuel rods out of a cooling pool and putting it into another cask, and then they're taking that cask and lifting it and putting it down onto a truck, and then they're driving the truck 100 yards to a more structurally sound containment area where it'll sit there for X amount of years until they find a final resting spot for it. So that's how these rods have to be removed.
This is a decades-long process, really, to decommission this plant. In the meantime, what environmental scares do we have? And maybe this is for another show mm-hmm. since we're running out of time, but that brings up an interesting question.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in the meantime, Japan has to find other sources of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And they're actually trying to import more natural gas and import oil.
Mm-hmm.
And coal, mm-hmm. you know, so those are the consequences, you know, here associated with that. So, okay, we got to start to wrap up. Hey, what's on tomorrow?
Tomorrow, tune in to the Mountain Life at 9 a.m. with Tim Henney, and I will also be hosting that. We'll be speaking with Carolyn Rose, nurse at the Summit County Health Department, about the Health Care Act. She's one of the panelists on Monday, December 2nd at the KPCW Community Health Forum. So she'll be talking about that. We'll also be joined by Chalk Hill winemaker Lisa Bishop Forbes to talk about wine for Thanksgiving. We're shifting gears all over the place tomorrow. And then finally, a conversation with a writer for The New Yorker who wrote a book called Anything That Moves about what we eat. Not Whoa. Necessarily for Thanksgiving.
Really?
So tune in tomorrow at 9 a.m.
What?
Yeah.
How do you do it with all those guys?
Maybe it's not a good one to run before Thanksgiving. But
no.
We're doing it.
That's great. All right. I will tune in. Let's take one last break for underwriters, and we'll come back. We'll say our goodbyes. It's This Green Earth.
Are you a treasure hunter? Do you like to upscale and find creative ways to reuse materials? Volunteering at the Park City Restore gives you the first look at donations. Your gift of time means more affordable housing services are available through Habitat for Humanity, and you get first peek at the daily stream of Restore donations. Learn how you can get involved at habitat-utah.org. Click on the big yellow volunteer button. Habitat for Humanity of Summit and Wasatch Counties is a nonprofit organization.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longreimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Park City Nursery. For 30 years, we know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com. VaultHomeLoans.com. Purchase and refinance mortgages. Conventional FHA and VA, 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Hey, welcome back to This Green Earth. It's time to wrap up and thank our underwriters for whom this show would not be possible. They include Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough.
Republic Services.
Habitat for Humanity's Restore.
Rocky Mountain Power.
San Francisco Design.
And Prudential Utah Real Estate.
Hey, you can always join us on Facebook at KPCW This Green Earth. Again, thanks to Jason Utgard, owner of the Spotted Door. Thanks for coming in, Jason.
Yep, thank you.
And we'll talk more another time about your work with the Climate Reality Project.
Okay.
Sorry we didn't get to that. And thank you, Lynn, for taking the time.
Absolutely.
Always a pleasure.
Nice to be on with you.
All right. Well, always there to return to favor if you ever need it. Hey, thanks again for joining us. Every Tuesday, 9 a.m., it's This Green Earth. We'll be back on next week. Now we'll be back. Don't forget, this is KPCW 91.9 FM Park City.
Only in Park City, only on KPCW.